Welcome to PPM Simplifies. This is a weekly podcast that will help you have a better understanding on environmental regulations and how they relate to your industry. In each episode, we'll talk with experts across various industries who will share their insights with you. This is PPM Simplifies. Hello, this is Todd Perry, and welcome to PPM Simplifies. Today we're joined by Paul Hansen. Paul's out of our Birmingham, Alabama office. Paul is an amazing engineer. He deals in a lot of different medias, a lot of different areas, but he is a specialist in environmental compliance. And today we're going to talk about environmental compliance for manufacturers. And there are a lot of, that's a very wide space. But we got the right guy to give us a good playing field to understand what happens on, with environmental compliance for manufacturers. Paul, welcome to the show. How you doing, man?
Great to be here. Looking forward to talking a little environmental compliance today.
Man, absolutely. We're going to have a great time with it. And so let's just get into it. So maybe we should start here. I've got a facility I want to construct. And what should I be thinking about when I think about environmental compliance?
Just when you start considering environmental compliance, it's going to be different for everybody. Whether you have a long-time existing facility going through permit changes or a greenfield facility, but usually you want to start just by reviewing your permits. Let's just say, for instance, you've already applied, you've received your permits. The number one thing to do is just read your permits. You would be surprised how many people will go months, years without ever actually reviewing those. And it has everything you need to know in there. And it'll tell you where you may have some gaps or, just kind of keep it fresh on your mind. I would say that's probably the number one place to start. It's almost like, when you call tech support and they ask, is your computer plugged in? Is your environmental compliance plugged in? Read your permits.
how many times in our life and through business, you develop a program, but as time goes on, you don't really look at it, and you kind of what is contained in the information gets a little gray. And I think that's great advice to our listening audience. As you think about compliance, first place start, go look at your permits, because your permits are going to tell you how you should operate, what kind of missions you should have, and how should they come together, and how should you report.
Right. Whether you're just, reviewing your current, compliance calendar checklist, or if you're trying to make one, just sit down and read it. A lot of times it doesn't take that long. I'd say one of the next places you'd want to check is looking at, who's been doing your daily, weekly, monthly checks, just, general compliance items, SPCC checks, BMP checks, haz waste audits, visual inspections. Take a look at who's doing those. If it's not, yourself doing it, make sure that whoever's conducting these, they know what they're looking for, that they know what they're doing, and that they're not just, pencil whipping the sheet, so to speak. Being a formula regulator, I kind of draw back to this a little bit. A lot of times when you go in there, it's easy to tell when somebody's just been going down and checking boxes. Because a lot of times inspectors could come in and they might ask you to go around and do an inspection with them or something if you haven't done your check for the day. So making sure that you're doing those properly and that you know what you're looking for no matter who's doing it, I'd say that's another kind of compliance check to kind of go through.
Yeah, that's a very interesting place to mention. And if I'm an owner of a large manufacturing facility, Do I need to think about, in regards to an audit, I'm going to wait until the state regulators come in or EPA comes in and looks at my facility for me to figure out what's deficient? Is that a best practice?
Absolutely not. That would not be a best practice to wait until they show up. You want to stay ahead of the game with compliance, and we'll dive into that a little bit more here. But what you want to do is, think about when was the last time you were audited? And I think we kind of touched on this a little bit ago. Say you've been in the same position at a facility for, a decade. A lot of times you can have or go what I call nose blind to it. You know, you've been doing the same thing over and over. And a lot of times it's good just to have a fresh set of eyes in there. I mean, you may have an error somewhere that's just been carried over for who knows how long. And it's not that you're necessarily negligent or don't know what it is you're doing, but it's something that just, it doesn't grab your attention because you see it every single day you come in. And it's good to have a fresh set of eyes on that, you know, to look over your plans, your permits, your emission calculations, or just, you know, walk through the facility with you. There's a lot of things, I see it a lot. There's a lot of things people just kind of miss because it doesn't jump out to them like it does somebody coming in who isn't as familiar with the facility.
That's exactly right. And well said. And I was having a little fun with you. So good answer on that. So you touched on this in a big picture, and I'm going to ask for a little bit more amplification.
Okay.
What data is being used or goes into my permit? How's that collected and how's it used?
I think to kind of look at this is you want to see, you know, we can start with an air permit since, you know, that's kind of my realm of expertise. What emission factors are you using? Is it AP42 factors? Is it stack test data? Is it, you know, facility specific information, something you receive from a sister facility they're using to put together your potentials to emit or calculating your actual emissions? You want to know where that's coming from. We've had a situation with a client before where, you know, it's nothing changed at the facility. Years and years have gone by and it's just, you know, going through a Title V renewal, you know, just kind of got a little complacent with it and was like, well, nothing's changed, so we're fine. And I just posed the question, hey, are you fine signing your name to this, saying it's correct, and nobody has looked over these emission factors? And it just kind of, it gave pause, and it ended up, you know, nearly a rewrite of the permit application, because we realized, you know, a lot of these were from 20 years ago and there was a handshake agreement somewhere that it's okay to use this, but you couldn't tie it back to anything. There was no defensible proof, so to speak, for using some of these emission factors. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, don't get complacent during renewals. And that would go for, you know, water permits, Title V permits, synthetic miner applications, anything like that. Understand the data that you're putting into this permit so that you can get a good permit that represents your facility. It's worth noting that, you know, if you put bad data in and your permit doesn't address everything, if you're compliant with a bad permit, that's still non-conformance. And you can't hold the state, county, local authorities, EPA responsible for receiving that bad permit. It's still on the facility to make sure that they're abiding by all the applicable regulations, federal and state, whether or not it's correctly in your permit.
And, you know, and man, that is really well said. You mentioned renewals. So if I have a small source air permit, or if I've got, you know, a discharge water permit, typically, and I know it varies from state to state, but how often are those renewed?
Title V permits are typically going to be renewed once every 5 years. For just say like general NPDES permits or something, you're probably looking at 3 to 5 year range. And synthetic miner permits, as far as air goes, that varies state to state. For instance, in the state of Alabama, they don't expire. Until you make a change, you have that permit. So there's some that I'm familiar with that are, you know, 15, 16 years old. However, in the state of Mississippi, those are renewed every so often. I hesitate to guess off the top of my head here, but if I remember right, it's in that 3 to 5 year range. But luckily we have some Mississippi professionals that are on top of those.
Well, and you make a point of is when you do come into a permit renewal time, that's a great time to take a time out, think through your processes, how your facility is operating, what changes have occurred, to make sure, you know, you've got something that accurately reflects what you're doing. Because if you got an old permit that was approved, but you've changed your process since then, you're not in compliance. So that's a great point. Hey, let's go to another area, Paul.
Okay.
So at my facility, I store, you know, some liquid chemicals, you know, diesel, oil, solvent, whatever it might be, in a significant quantity to where I might need an SPCC. What are things that are missed or common things people need to be aware of when thinking about a spill plan?
First would be, do you have adequate training practices? The people that are responsible for, you know, conducting your inspections, as we mentioned earlier, those that would be on a spill response team or that is responsible for just, you know, checking, do we have adequate materials here to clean up a spill? You want to make sure they're prepared, that they have what they need to respond to those, and that they understand what it is they're actually doing. Another point, I guess, to make here is that with mobile containers, one thing I'll see a lot is there's these handy little dollies that people will set 55-gallon drums on. It's great for, you know, drips or something like that to keep them from hitting the floor, but they'll be wheeled out to certain areas where they're left for, you know, 2-3 weeks, or maybe they just, you know, park them somewhere on those. And those are not proper containments. You should be able to contain at least the contents of the container, you know, be it a 275-gallon tote or a 55-gallon drum. So that's one thing I think I would stress, is that when you're going around and conducting your inspections, look at these mobile containers. If it's something that's going to be wheeled out onto the floor, used for that day, and then taken right back and put into a secondary containment area, that's fine. But if you're going to have it parked somewhere for days or weeks on end, and it's something that's used slowly, that should have secondary containment with it. So that's something I think would be good to point out that I noticed in a lot of facilities that just tends to get overlooked.
And pile resource that I've seen more and more out there, more and more containment vessels are coming out with double wall, to where you can kind of, you know, take that double wall containment with you wherever it might go. That's something I see a lot out there.
Right. I guess to talk about like double walled tanks, more and more that's what people are starting to use rather than single walled ASTs, especially to store small amounts of, you know, let's just say diesel fuel for equipment on a site or something. And one thing I noticed gets missed with that a lot is during those monthly inspections that are required, you're supposed to check the interstice. And it's real simple. I mean, there are monitors out there you can put on those, be it electronic gauges to detect liquid on the inside, or float gauges, or it's as simple as screwing off the top of a little tube, basically, that sticks down to the bottom, and getting something to stick down there to check for moisture. The idea is, if you detect product down there, you know, it's the same as if your tank started leaking and filled up a concrete secondary containment area. That tank is no good. And that's what you're supposed to be checking. But more often than not, people just aren't looking at those. And you could have a disaster just waiting if the inside tank has, you know, rusted and product has spilled out. And now you have between you and a release is that secondary containment area.
That's spot on. And, but, you know, be very mindful of, because again, you know, if you have an oops, chemicals in liquid form can make a really big mess really fast.
Right.
Another area, Paul, with the universal waste rules, sometimes people have a hard time keeping their waste streams straight, or they kind of combine them when they shouldn't. What are some things you see from compliance out there that people should be aware of?
With universal waste, I mean, there's a lot that could be said about this, but I'd say just to hit on some of the high points. One is starting with aerosol cans. I mean, you walk around a facility, especially these larger ones, you can find empty cans sitting all over the place. And it's as simple as getting a can puncture device, puncturing those, and then, of course, you have the drum that you would want your label on, you know, designating it as a D001 flammable. And then that catches the hazardous material, and then the can itself can be either thrown in the trash or recycled as non-hazardous waste. Some things about those puncture devices that I see a lot is, one, where you would put the can in, a lot of times the top will be left off of those. All of these containers are supposed to be what's called RCRA closed, and that means putting the cap back on the device while it's not in use. The other thing that I see a lot with those is they're not properly grounded. It is required that these things be grounded, but I mean, more so it's safety. I mean, you're dealing with something that's ignitable, and a lot of times even if it is grounded, you'll see an alligator clip, you know, hanging on to the paint, and then it'll be screwed into a piece of sheet metal over on the side, and that's far from a proper ground. I don't think a lot of people really think about that. You definitely want to kind of get down to the bare metal if you're using an alligator clip. You know, just sand away a little bit of paint on the rim of that thing and then clip it there, and then actually, you know, use a copper rod or something, drive it down, get a proper ground. That way you don't become the ground, get one of those static sparks, and that leads to a whole mess of issues if you end up in that situation.
Right, right. And you know, and that we could do a podcast just on some of those rules and issues. And so to the listening audience, I want to go one more spot with you and drawing on your experience, because you are a former regulator. And by the way, I should mention he's also an Auburn graduate, and they actually make some of the smartest engineers I've ever been around, and Paul happens to be one of them. But what should a facility you're a good man. What should a facility consider when preparing for a compliance inspection? You know the state or the federal, officials are coming in to inspect. What would you do? What should you do to prepare?
You always want to be prepared for these. Sometimes you know when they're going to come, but a lot of times, you know, they're going to pop in unannounced. So you just kind of want to have a plan in place. Make sure that records are readily available. All these things that you're sending into the state or whatever, they're probably going to want to confirm, just taking the state for example, that you have all the material, what it is there on site. And if you're having to go fumble around, go to a bunch of different places to get this, do some calculations on a spreadsheet, it starts to kind of, I don't know, show a lack of preparedness. And a lot of these things, and I'll talk about this some more, it's kind of perception's reality. You want to at least present the perception that, hey, we're 100% compliance 100% of the time, and that, you know, we're on top of everything, what we're sending in to you, we're 100% sure that it's accurate. So you just want to be able to get to those quickly. And two, it reduces the amount of time that they have to be on site there. You know, obviously, the quicker you can get in a regulatory agency and the quicker you can get them off the site, it's probably going to work out in your favor. You don't want to try and rush them out, but let's try and minimize the time there. So just have those ready. Also, just general housekeeping, and this is probably written into your spill plan and your stormwater pollution plans as well. Keeping the grounds looking nice, you know, pick up trash, litter. Some facilities, it's easier to keep clean than others, but make an effort for that. You know, it goes back to perception. Perception's reality. If they come in and the place just looks like a disaster, it goes from looking from compliance to you could be pushing them towards looking for problems. Well, if they don't care about this, if this looks like a mess, what else is wrong? So it's one of those simple things to do, and just kind of over the course of time, you know, I've been walking around with plant managers who, you know, they'll see a wrapper floating across the ground, pick it up and stick it in their pocket. I mean, it's as simple as that sometimes, let alone, you know, bigger garbage cans, cigarette butts even. I mean, you'll find those all over the place. You want to give that good perception. And I think one last part to hit on here is have your key personnel ready. People that would be a part of the inspection, in the control rooms, your maintenance managers, other people that a regulatory agency might want to talk to, just kind of prep them for how to handle that. You don't want them to just start talking about, oh yeah, we had this happen last week and man, it was such a mess, and well, we got it fixed up, and then it leaves you sitting there, you know, face in hand because you didn't report an issue or something. You know, just answer their questions. Don't keep talking. Have them prepared so that they don't just, you know, start nervous talking, I guess it is. And have people, you know, just ready to show them what it is that they need to see when they're coming by a control room, you know, what parameters they're going to want to look at. Just again, you know, keep it running smoothly, keep it running fast, in and out.
Paul, this has been fantastic. It's almost been like in a master's course, a 101 course of what environmental compliance is for a manufacturer, to kind of hit on some of the key points, drawing your experience. I think our audience is really going to enjoy the podcast today because you definitely hit a lot of great topics and gave a lot of food for thought and how to prepare if you do have a, and you will get, you know, audited, you will get an inspection from the environmental agencies and just to be ready for it. Paul, thank you so much for making time for us today. It's been great. Any last things you want to leave for our audience?
I mean, definitely if you have any questions or anything, I mean, feel free to reach out to us. Any questions came up, if you want to hear more about what was going on, feel free to give me a call. I'll be happy to talk about it. Other than that, just remember, you know, compliance, it's just not just the reports you send in. It's starting from the permit to the reports, inspections you're making, all the way through the inspections from a regulatory agency.
Absolutely well said. And the easiest way to get in touch with us, to get in touch with Paul or any of our other experts, is go to our website. There's a contact us form. And if you'll put that in, they'll get to the right person, me, Paul, or whoever else, and we'll get right back to you, we promise. Paul, thanks again for joining us today. It's been a great conversation. And to our audience, thanks for joining us once again. This is Todd Perry, and this is PPM Simplifies. Thank you for finding our podcast. For more information, be sure to visit our website at ppmco.com. To stay updated on new episodes, feel free to subscribe to PPM Simplifies on your podcast app of choice. Until next time, this is PPM Simplifies.